Now, with just 6 days to polling in general election 2020, we want to turn our attention to the issue of mental health and where it lies on the list of priorities for the different political parties. For more on this, I'm joined in studio this morning by Paul Gilligan, who's a clinical psychologist and CEO at St. Patrick's Mental Health Services and author of Raising Emotionally Healthy Children. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for coming in to us.
Yeah, good morning.
Paul, I suppose before we go on and talk about what the political parties should promise to do or what they might do in the next government, let's talk a little bit about how we currently do when it comes to the provision of mental health services as a country. In your assessment?
Yeah, we have a number of challenges, and I think everybody working in the sector and indeed anybody who's been trying to access services knows that we have very serious difficulties. If you go through all of the services, if you start with adult care, those who are most vulnerable, the ones with the most serious difficulties, very often their human rights are being infringed. They're getting services that fall way below the standards and regulations that are required by the Mental Health Commission. If you look at child and adolescent care, we have major waiting lists. Sometimes we have 2,000 people on the waiting list pretty much at any given time. We know that over 200 children wait over a year. We right across the mental health services, there are serious staff shortages. And so the list goes on and on. This isn't a political comment. This has been the case for years. The people working in the area are doing their best, but without the adequate resources, without a proper strategy and without a recruitment campaign, we are in trouble.
Let's talk about access for a minute, because that is, I suppose, you know, the big barrier for people. We know that people are trying to access services and they either have to wait a very long time or they don't get the services that they need. If we start at the bottom and talk about children, because we know that there's a huge shortage when it comes to child and adolescent mental health services. There are children who are being turned away from services. There is children who get help depending on where they live. It seems to operate very much like a postcode lottery. It's something we've covered a lot on the show in the past. The unfairness of that, of maybe living in Galway and being able to access a child psychologist and living in a different part of the country and not being able to do, how do we kind of move past that? Is that all down to staffing?
Well, yes, staffing and structure. So remember, if you're dealing with catchment areas, then you could have a fully resourced team in one catchment area and not have a team in another area at all. So that's essentially about structure. And one of the difficulties we have is we've forgotten in a way that this is an island. And so what you find is there's area boundaries that are created over time. And then if a family happens to be in an area where you can't get resources, and remember, there are some areas where it's very difficult to staff a team. And if a team starts to deplete, it's even harder to staff the team because other members of the team say, I'm on my own, or I've got one colleague, I can't continue to provide the service. This really speaks to this idea of maybe re-centralising, gathering our resources together, looking at how we can provide a service to everybody in the country. And that may mean people travelling a further distance, but at least they can be sure of getting a service. Where at the moment, there are many people who have been without services for a long, long time, and that's about how it's structured.
If we take a young person then, maybe a preteen or somebody in and around that age, and they can't access the service and they're left waiting, you deal with people, you know, all of the time in this arena. Illustrate the impact of that for me on both that child and the people, I suppose, that are trying to mine that child.
So what happens when you develop a mental health issue is you start to become disempowered. So you aside from the actual emotional distress, so put yourself in the position of, we all have days where we feel down, but multiply that by 20 and you'll know what it's like to be depressed. And then on top of that, you know you need help, but there's nowhere to get that help. Or your parents or your friends are trying their best, but they don't know what they're actually dealing with. And that's adding, of course, to your distress. And it's also adding to your stigma because you're thinking, I amn't even worth getting help. So what's wrong with me? And so this is a cycle, and then the difficulty becomes worse and worse. And so what you find is that if we don't intervene early enough, the level of care that a person needs may become more extensive. And of course, as that occurs, the availability of those services are lessened. So it's a cycle of deprivation effectively, and we need to break that. Now, unfortunately, lots of people are looking for resources, but we need to do it at all levels. There needs to be a really good primary care system in place for mental health. We have lots of therapists out there. We need to pull them all together. Start with saying, what have we got and how do we put some organisation on that? Pulling the independent sector, the voluntary sector, the statutory sector together. And then we need to build 5 centres of excellence, in my view. Now, I know that that's a matter of debate, but St. Pat's is a centre of excellence. We need to build 5 centres of excellence and promise everybody a service. Now, if you happen to be 100 kilometres away or 50 kilometres away, that isn't right, but at least you know you're going to get a service, and we can staff that up and work with that and then build from there. Otherwise, if we've no foundation, we've nothing to build on.
How much is money a barrier in all of this? Because you will hear people say that, you know, you can get help if you have the provisions to pay for it. If you can see a psychologist every week at maybe a cost of 70 or 80 euro per session, if you have that financial stability, you know, you may be able to get the help. But for those who aren't that financially stable, you know, are they locked out of the system then?
Yeah, finance is a big issue. I mean, there's a number of myths that have been created about mental health, about healthcare in general, but about mental health in particular. One of them is we spend too much money. The second one is there's lots of waste. Okay. Now, if we actually look at the facts, we know that less money has been spent on mental health care out of the health budget than should be by nearly 5%. I mean, it's 6% versus 10%. And in some cases, you could argue it should be 12%.
Okay.
Most of the countries in the world are spending more than that. Our own policies are saying we should be spending more than that, but we continue to add little bits every year. Now, funding has been added over the last 3 years, but it isn't enough. And the difficulty is demand is rising all the time. So we need a substantial investment of money, end of story. Yes, there is an issue at the moment around a person who can afford and a person who can't afford. And that needs to be, there needs to be a level playing field in that regard. I don't want to join all the people who are saying we need resources only. Resources won't fix this in itself, but we need to debunk the myth that we are spending too much money. We're spending too little. There are too few staff. And if we don't address that, it's going to get even worse. And everybody knows that, and we need to really put it up to the new government to address that.
You mentioned stigma there, and I think, you know, it's something that, you know, still is very much around. And let's talk about the workplace a little bit, because I actually saw a tweet the other day that stuck in my head. It was somebody had tweeted to say that, you know, I've just signed a card there for somebody who's been off work for the past week or two who has appendicitis. I was off work for 5 months last year suffering with mental health issues, and I didn't hear from a sinner. You know, I mean, we haven't really moved on, certainly in the workplace. I feel that there are still people who even have some understanding of mental health issues who are judging people if they have challenges in that regard. And that message hasn't gotten fully through, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, we've taken 2 steps forward, but we're for every 2 steps forward, we take 1 step back. So I think there are certain types of mental health difficulties that people are more accepting of than others. I think that our stigma is being challenged. We are challenging ourselves. It's very helpful when celebrities say that they've experienced mental health difficulties, etc. But when it comes to our own doorstep, we still remember we're coming from a society where only 40, 50 years ago, we were placing people with serious mental health difficulties into institutions and leaving them there without any legal recourse. We were effectively a society that had a really negative view of people with mental health difficulties. That doesn't go away overnight. And of course, when it comes to our own doorstep, we're challenged. And so, yes, if we're an employer or we're colleagues in a workplace, we're saying, well, you know, I wonder what that actually means. Should I send the card or not send the card? Should I acknowledge it or not? Now, a lot of that has to be taken from the person themselves, because remember, you may not want people to know, but at the end of the day, there is serious misinformation and misunderstanding. I mean, we still fall back on old beliefs when we're pushed around mental health. And yes, it needs to be challenged. And that can only be done through 2 things. One, giving people and educating people with the right information. And secondly, providing people with care on a timely basis, because that's the single biggest contributor to stigma. If you are experiencing a mental health difficulty and you're not getting help, your mood, your behaviour, your lifestyle starts to deteriorate, and that adds to the stigma. So people need to know, actually, you can recover, you will recover, and you can live a very happy, fulfilling life, even if you have the most serious mental health difficulty.
Yeah, you mentioned there celebrities and kind of well-known people, I guess, speaking about mental health. And that is kind of a phenomenon, I guess, that's happened more and more over the past couple of years. And it can only be welcomed. However, I have heard or read a couple of articles actually only this week with people saying that sometimes it can simplify what is a very nuanced issue. So if somebody is in the thick of it, suffering from a severe bout of depression or anxiety, sometimes the, you know, hashtag positive thinking or hashtag, don't be afraid to talk, sometimes doesn't really help someone in that scenario, and yet they feel everybody else is living their best lives on social media and talking about something. But it is a bit more multifaceted than that for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, positive messages about positive lifestyle, positive thinking are all great, but we have to see them within the context of what we understand and know about mental health and mental health difficulties. And one of the problems we have is that we tend to group everybody with a mental health difficulty together. So you're absolutely correct. So when we hear a story about somebody who had anxiety but engaged in physical education or in whatever, or sorry, physical training, physical activity,
and it fixed them as such.
Yeah, exactly. That can cause us to have more trauma if we're experiencing a serious mental health difficulty and we're either not able to do that, or we've tried it and it hasn't worked. So we have to see mental health difficulties in a larger context and understand that, you know, certain types of difficulties are harder to address than others. That yes, there are some that if you intervene early and you can deal with it in a particular way and based on your personality, there are certain things that are going to work. I mean, there's a lot of expertise around how to treat mental health difficulties, and recovery should be expected. But ultimately, it's right down to the individual, because every person who experiences depression or anxiety or psychosis will experience it in their own individual way.
So it's extremely unique to them. So therefore, what they need to do to try and deal with it will be a unique set of resources.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that we have done over the past couple of years in this country is there's been a lot of talk and I think a lot of money put behind the message of, you know, it's okay to talk, come forward and talk. And yet we haven't backed that up then with making sure that when somebody is brave enough to actually open their mouth and admit to somebody that they have a problem or pick up the phone to somebody, that they will be met with the relevant service. And I would feel that somebody might only do that once. And if the door is shut in their face once, they may not ask for help a second time. Would you agree with that?
And that's absolutely correct, and comes back to the point I made earlier on, that it adds to the stigma then. So you think, well, you know, like if you come forward and say, I've got the flu, or you come forward and say, I've got epilepsy or diabetes or I've cancer, as we know, we expect to get the right treatment. If we don't get that, we're starting to ask the question, what's going on here? Am I, you know, is this serious enough to warrant help? Do I deserve the help? And if we didn't get help in those areas, there would be outrage. When it comes to mental health, we get into all this sort of confused thinking. I mean, focus on prevention is fantastic, and I think it's really important. But without the treatment side, you are going to simply add to people's distress and the stigma. And the people who have the most serious difficulties are often the ones left without the appropriate care. So we've got to address that piece.
We've seen the different manifestos been launched this week and over the past kind of week in relation to all the political parties. I'm not hearing about mental health as much as I thought I would in this whole conversation around the general election. Do you feel it's high up on the list of priorities?
Well, to be fair to all the political parties, they've all got something in their manifesto about mental health care. And I'm not going to comment today, but I would ask people to take a look and see if they think that that is going to address the problem. And if they aren't sure about what the actual problem is, what they just have to do is look to their own family, to a neighbour, to a relative, and they'll know immediately what I'm talking about. And they need to assess that situation and look at what's been promised. I don't think it's a priority, to be honest with you. I think there, to be fair, it's there. I think there has been some conversation, but I'm not sure it's a priority. And I think we still very often are worried about raising mental health. I think people still feel if I raise it, will it sort of put some sort of sense that I need help, that I'm different from everybody else. And so it hasn't become a priority issue. It is there, to be fair, but it isn't a priority issue. And it would be great to see in the week coming up to the election that it would become a priority.
Once we have, and finally, Paul, once we have the new government in place, then give us maybe your top three things that you feel need to be done for us to be maybe in a better place in 12 months' time or in 18 months' time.
Well, I would say we need to commit to developing 5 centres of excellence that provide the full range of care and commit to making them accessible to everyone in the country.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think we need proper resourcing, and that's really linked in with the amount of the healthcare budget that's spent on mental health. Except that it has to be carefully spent, but it needs to be there. We need a massive recruitment campaign. We have a problem with getting people to work in the sector. And lastly, we do need to continue with our stigma and awareness. That job is only half done. And it's important, because if we keep doing that, we will make mental health a priority among the general population.
Okay, Paul Gilligan, a clinical psychologist and CEO at St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, and indeed author of Raising Emotionally Healthy Children. Thanks so much, Paul, for coming into us this morning.
Thank you.